Hello, and welcome to another Untitled Project on the Cause Crosscast Network. My name is Saif Fakadu. I am a manager here at causecross.com. And joining me on the other line is the real inventor of the Southwest Philly floater, Alexi. Alexi, what's good, kid? How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing well. I'm glad you didn't take a shot at my last name.
You know what?
No, you know, no one does.
That's a horrible host job. I did so good the last few days, making sure we were set, you know, giving proper notice. And I was like, I should have asked you how to say your last name because I wanted to.
You know, I think you might have been having gone through this as a child too. When the substitute teacher comes up to your name in roll call and there's like a huge pause.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm here. All right. just go to the next person. I get it. I'm here.
I got you, fam. Right here. No, but I know. Really excited to record this. Hey, you have a lot of great podcasts of your own, which we'll get into in your writing. But as we always joke around and talk at the intros, it's always interesting going from DMs to like an actual, like at least
That's
proper
true.
Conversation.
That's so. True. I think that the DM's been destigmatized since, you know, beyond the song because of the implication. There was a period of time where the DMs had the. You know, a little bit of sauciness to it. And now I think that it's become a friendly platform for everyone, as well as the oft nefarious DM that one will encounter if they are in that space as well.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's going to shoot their shot of Vail, but yeah, it's much more of just a common means of communication now. So
shooting your shot is a tale as old as time. So that's never going to stop.
Well, speaking of time, we're going to go a little bit back in time. So, Alexi, to give us our listeners and you know, people who read this on the blog, a little background of where you're from, you know, where you grew up, and then we'll get to high school later. But, you know, young Alexi.
Wow. So, we got a little thunder going.
It's but, nuts. It was like, yeah. It just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, for real. My ears were popping from the change in pressure in the car, which I knew it was about to go down. But, So I was born in Philadelphia. I was raised as a youngin on Naudain Street, right off of 16th. So close to South Philly, close to Center City, kind of in a university hospital area if you're familiar with Philadelphia. So right off South Street. You know, had the opportunity from a young age to be, you know, just right in the thick of things in Philadelphia. So that kind of spurned my love for the city, which if you're one of the people that follows me on Twitter or any social media, Philadelphia and my love affair is, it's quite out in the open.
It's absolute, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's real.
You know what? I don't want to interrupt, but I was just thinking, it was like when you said born in Philadelphia and raised, I was like, conversation.
Do it.
I was like, is
don't
that a
do
bit?
It.
Exactly.
Don't.
But I was like, no, he really was there. All right. So.
No, I'm definitely not trying to be compared to any greats in anything. I don't want that on my shoulders. Philadelphia greats, lacrosse greats, don't do it.
I was like, oh man. I was like, born and raised. I was like, on the playground is where you spent most of your day.
It's not necessarily wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I actually, you know, I was living in Old City last year, and I would walk down to 7th and Lombard and play at this park called Star Park. I would play pickup basketball there. And, you know, I was talking to my mom on the phone one day, and she's like, oh, so where have you been playing, you know, pickup at? And I was like, oh, I was playing at Star Park. And she's like, yeah, figures. Like, that was your favorite park when you were a little kid, too. I was like, damn it. Man. I was born and raised in the playground. I'm meeting all the cliches.
So, yeah, sorry to interrupt. So, early years in Philly, or did you move
out? So for grade school, I obviously, you know, my parents were young, cool, hipster couple, and I showed up to ruin their life. I was the first. So, with a young, hyper kid that, I was a swimmer. I had always been a swimmer growing, you know, through kindergarten all the way through my senior year of high school. So they could keep me indoors for that, but it was pretty hard at a point with no real ranging fields around or anything to keep me from running like directly into traffic or like as far south as humanly possible at the time. So they moved us out to Lower Marion, which is where I spent the remainder of my, you know, grade school years all the way up through my senior year.
Now, were you, I have to ask, were you in Lower Merion when Kobe took Brandy to the prom?
I'm not like 39, so no. I'm 25. Like, no, he graduated in like 95 or 96.
Oh, was that maybe like one or two, or but I guess no.
I graduated in 2011.
Oh, okay.
So we were a bit off. But I did have the opportunity to see Kobe Bryant come in a number of times. You know, as a swimmer, you're in there early. That is kind of one of the hallmarks of being a swimmer, other than just being miserable, which I still that's a cross I still bear as well. But yeah, I got a chance. You know, he would come in before some Sixers games and just go get up shots. I would just get out of the pool. I wouldn't hit, listen to my coach. My coach would be, get back in. I got stuff to do.
Yeah,
I would walk out of practice no matter what was going on, and I would whatever. I got Kobe's here. Shut up.
Yeah.
And I would go and I would just watch Kobe put up shots like an insane madman. And you know, that was a level of terrifying dedication that I had never seen before in my life.
Any cross paths or anything like, hey kid, the ball bounced your way or something like?
I shook his hand a number of times and
cool.
He says that that standard athlete spiel. I had the chance actually to meet Muhammad Ali, and I'm pretty sure it was like the exact same speech.
Oh,
it was wow. Like, how are you? And I was like, no, they're okay. They were just like, well, you'll probably be fine. And that was like the end of the conversation for both of those like huge moments in my life. It's just marked with real honesty.
So what race were you good in for swimming? Were you a distance swimmer?
The fastest ones. Oh, absolutely not. No, I hate being tired. I hate it. It's like my least favorite thing in the world. So I definitely swam the 50, which was the shortest one and the easiest one, 50 freestyle, and the 100 freestyle. Occasionally the 100 backstroke, but like I was hitting lane ropes and I was all over the, like, I was made to work harder than I did is really actually the answer. But I did the 50, I did the 100, made the state finals a number of times. I think my senior year I qualified for the Olympic trials in that.
Whoa.
Love
that. That's podcast magic. Just a casual dropping of stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't go. It was lacrosse time and I was so burnt out that I would have come in last. Like I would have gotten obliterated by like every single person, and it's like you get an email like, hey, do you want to spend your own money to fly to California to get annihilated by everyone? It was just like, no.
There's a kid at Hopkins, Scott Armstrong. He graduated with me. Great guy. He was one of our best swimmers. But when we were in school, he kept saying, it was like, yo, there's this boy in Baltimore area, this Phelps kid. He's going to be kind of big.
And then, yeah.
So I always like the swimming scene. Is it similar? Do you feel like the dedication involved? I mean, there's not as much equipment carrying around, obviously, in swimming.
Totally different. In swimming, I was the coolest kid in swimming. The kids are weird. I mean, I'm weird. Like, I fit in, so it was fine. But, like, yeah, people, like, looked up to me in swimming. Lacrosse, I was, get away from me. Who is this kid that talks too much and is on the internet all the time? but with swimming, no, they're totally, totally different atmospheres. Completely different spheres of, you know, I mean, occasionally the social spheres would cross from here to there. But yeah, very, very, you know, different. Swimming I've always described as being cold, wet, tired, and alone all the time.
Oh yeah.
That's just what you are. You're cold, wet, tired, and alone.
So did you have to end up choosing when you were, I mean, if you got to states and qualified for Olympics, I'm sure you got some looks for swimming team.
Yeah. Yeah. That choice was made already in my head. I hated swimming a lot, like the majority of the time I was doing it. But I was committed to finishing it out, and God forbid, you know, I got like a really, really, really great offer, for swimming. I guess I would have to stick it out, but, I didn't really pursue that as much, especially with lacrosse recruiting, you know, that was happening junior year. Swimming recruiting doesn't even really happen until senior year because a lot of kids are still growing. And, like, you know, a lot of people hit a spurt where they're suddenly incredible senior year. So it was kind of figured out on its own.
So, like, give us a glimpse of, like, your recruitment process in high school for lacrosse. Like, it's still in the thick of the early recruiting process. I'm sure you didn't have, like, looks at eighth grade, but, like, any of your friends, you know, that kind of world. Like, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was a project, definitely more of an athlete than anything else. But you know, you're coming from a really high end lacrosse area. You're playing against high end lacrosse talent all the time. I mean, it's not that anybody who's playing on these teams is unskilled. I mean, it's just one of those things where it's kind of masked by the level of quality of play around you. But if your athleticism sticks out, then, and you're not like a complete raw psycho, then, you know, you'll get your looks here or there. So, you know, I was a little bit recruited my sophomore year. I didn't play a lot of club. I didn't play with, like, Dukes or Headstrong or any of those, really. I played with one club team. I guess their name is Seven Nations. They were only around for my year. It was a lot of good Dukes guys. It was dudes from Malvern and dudes from Conestoga and Haverford boys. But generally, you know, I got looks from Bryant and Colgate, Penn. And toward the end of that process, I think I had one really, really good tournament. Somewhere in the midst of that, I broke my foot, like the fall of my junior year, which was like complete panic mode.
Back in the pool.
No, I couldn't kick, actually. So I couldn't do anything. I was just like a manic bouncing. I'd broken my foot and I went into a classroom and I guess I still had that because it was like in the middle of the day at like a gym class or something because like I'm the hyperest kid alive.
Do you want to tell us how it happened? Skylar gave us a great story about almost getting concussed in like a playoff game. It was great.
It was 100%. I'm like embarrassed by it. Like I ended up getting biggest gym trier in the freaking yearbook because of this, because everyone found out that I broke my foot during gym class.
Tell me it was kickball. Please tell me
it was not kickball. Thank God. No. No. But I did also annihilate a poor girl on first base when I wasn't looking kickball. So
that might
have constituted to the gym chair thing. But I promise I wasn't that bad. But no, it was definitely going up, trying to moss somebody. I'm not sure if I even came down with it or not. But he landed on it. I heard a pop, but I didn't think about it. Walked up three flights of stairs. And in the middle of a chemistry exam, I raised my hand and I'm like, I have a broken foot. And the professor was just like, what are you talking about? You're just trying to get out of this test. And I was just like, I need to go to the hospital now. Just like I abdicated the test, like hopped out of the classroom, took the elevator downstairs. And yeah, I definitely had a broken foot.
Oh, man. So, go ahead.
Yeah, so I had that really good tournament a little bit after I had recovered from my foot injury. You know, I actually got on. I got a couple calls from your boy, Coach P. I didn't want to drop that fully because it definitely did not materialize, and like I knew that they carried a gigantic roster, and I was just like, okay, Alec, like that, get real. But you know, I did have Coach Dwan, our defensive coordinator, and Coach Toomey reach out, and you know, I had taken a visit to Penn. I had thought about going to Dartmouth and doing, but I would have had to do a prep year because like I'm not smart, and and so I went down to Loyola. I did some research into their majors and minors and stuff. Granted, I'm 16. I don't know what the hell I want to do anyway, but I did end up spying out what would be my eventual major in global studies. So I did some research into that. And you know, that was really close to along the lines of what I wanted to do. It was kind of a mixture of poli-sci and economics and some sociology. So that kind of that fit my current worldview. And you know, speaking with Coach Toomey and the academic resources and the kind of the family atmosphere that he was preaching, it became pretty clear pretty quick that was going to be my choice, especially with kind of the prestige that the program had at the moment, the building prestige, and you know, you could kind of feel a little bit of an energy there.
Was the complex, I forget the timeline, being built or had already been built?
This was like right as Ridley was built.
Oh, right.
So like, you know, you're walking off campus, still all the people who are giving me tours or whatever are like, yeah, you know, we used to come out from underneath the cafeteria, but now we have this gajillion dollar stadium over there. So it was definitely a selling point. They had I think the hand shuffleboard, the shuffleboard table, that might have been what sold me.
Oh, right on. So yeah, so moving to college, what was let's go with just your freshman year, since you already kind of described your reasoning for going Loyola. That was the title year. So how was that? Am I correct? Right, 2011?
That was right off the bat. We just kind of sort of ran the table.
Did you feel like it was your birthright to win every title?
I never won anything. I mean, like, I won swimming, but I hated swimming, so I didn't even really feel like I don't win. I don't win stuff. I'm not, like, I lose at Mario Party every time. Like, I don't get any of the cool stars. Like, I don't, like, that's not me. So I was absolutely dumbstruck, but I mean, like, I do not give myself an ounce of credit for that. Like, there was a team chemistry there that everyone could technically be, you know, given credit for. And I give credit to the incredible leaders on that team, you know, Scott Ratliff, Josh Hawkins, you know, even Joe Fletcher, Reed Acton, guys like that. They set an example, and every coach wants to talk about how a guy can set an example on the field and off the field. And, you know, you have guys like Justin Ward who do that to the T. They are exactly what a coach is looking for in that circumstance. And I love Justin Ward, but he's so rah-rah, and I'm not like that, that sometimes you need other personalities to kind of try and balance that out.
Mm, of course.
And guys like – I mean, I just keep coming back to Ratliff because I feel like he was such a ridiculous, unbelievable leader. But he will hit you with, you know, with an ounce of realism when you need it. And I think that is the kind of thing that carried us a little bit.
That team was loaded.
I mean, yeah, we were nasty. Yeah.
So, like, just like, you know, give us like, what was it like, you know, freshman year and that run, like, right around, I guess, midseason? Did you guys really think national title, or were you feeling that even in like fall ball?
My first college experience, so I didn't necessarily know. Obviously, I'd never been on a team that played with that kind of intensity. At the time, I was playing. This was my first time really playing mostly down low. I'd been playing LSM, but like I was kind of doing whatever. Especially my senior year, we didn't have a ton of talent on Laura Marion, so I was just I was used to just picking it up, running around, doing whatever I want, you know, throwing insane checks, just kind of playing like a dick. So I remember my second or third day ever at Loyola's program, just doing a ground ball drill. You pick it up, you flip it, and I did a behind the back flip to Josh Hawkins, and Coach Juan pulls me over to the side and just goes, "Hey, you do not have that card." And I was like, "Okay, I don't have that card. I guess I'm just gonna never, never, ever do that again." And I'm pretty sure I never, ever, ever did it again in practice.
All right. So, let's continue. No.
I mean, it's interesting. You are building this confidence, and you're building this, this energy. And of course, your Blue Jays at the end of the season managed to squelch that for like no reason. There was like actually no reason to play that game. It was after the conference finals. Or after the division, like we had won the ECAC already. I'm pretty sure we had come back from Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing you guys just because we hate you. And so this is like one of the most memorable. This is probably my most memorable college experience, like in lacrosse. I mean, obviously, like the Final Four was unbelievable. But from a standpoint of something vivid, this story is like what. when I want to explain a college lacrosse atmosphere to someone, this is what, you know, I explain it. So it's like, it's a beautiful day, got to be like 75 degrees. It's headed towards summer. Maybe it's 80, but the girls game was going on first. We were in the tunnel. Hopkins was in the tunnel on the other side. The girls game is going long. I guess it might be going into overtime, but we're all waiting to run out onto the field. We had, we're ready to warm up. And just standing in dead silence in like the most dramatic way imaginable, one beam of light coming out across their team about 40 yards away, a beam of light coming across ours. And, you know, at some point, just like the dam breaks and someone just starts screaming. And then both sides are just screaming at each other in the middle of an overtime game. Like, it's just pouring out of the stadium into like a very full, Ridley Athletic Complex. Just like two teams of like borderline grown adult men just like yelling at each other. And like, no one's going to go anywhere, but everyone's just yelling.
Oh, yeah.
So both sides are screaming at each other. And then we proceed to go out and go down like 9-0. And I was like, I guess they're not that kind of team. I'm not really sure. But I thought that was pretty cool, but never mind. That wasn't cool. So, we ended up mounting a comeback in the fourth quarter, chipping away. And losing in double overtime off of like a tipped ball. It just kind of trickled in. So we lose that game and we go into the locker room. Everyone is – it's a weird feeling because we're likely still going to be the number one overall seed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we just lost like to ruin our perfect season like to an incredible team, obviously, but a team that we feel we should have beaten. A team that we very well might see in the playoffs. We're not sure at the time. I'm not sure if you guys were in a conference, but I'd be willing to bet you were getting in a large bid. And then some random person, I cannot tell you who it is to this day. You know, everyone's sitting in their locker, head down. It's silent. There's no music. An encouraging word here or there from someone. Someone just brings in a heaping box of Chick-fil-A sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
So we're all just sitting there really sad, waiting for the first person to get up and just, like, get a sandwich from, like, the most devastating experience of our sporting lives. And eventually, like, it just ends in, like, a bunch of people, like, slowly scuffling to the middle of the room and, like, kind of pissily eating, like, five Chick-fil-A sandwiches. And that's just, like, how I remember, like, the saddest day of my sports life is just ending with, like, a couple really angry sandwiches.
That is, like, a deliciously sad. So winning the title, I mean, it's obviously, got to assume your number one sporting moment. But, like, as just a student at Loyola, did you have – even as a fan of watching ups, because you guys are pretty good in other sports. Or you guys just pretty much just keep with lacrosse players. But like, I really wanted to know, what's it like being a D1 lacrosse player in Baltimore? Like, I joke around with some Hopkins friends that they not resent, but they always call out, like, oh, they do everything for the lacrosse players. I was like, I want them to. You know what I mean? Like, I want to win championships. If that means that they get their own dorms and they live literally a separate life, I'm cool with that. You know,
I think it's very, very much what you make of it. People have the opportunity to kind of be whoever they want to be. You had guys like Joe Fletcher who are absolutely brilliant, and they study constantly, and you know, they're out there, you know, just doing exactly what they need to do to be a perfect lacrosse player and a perfect student, and a super, super nice guy. I can't say enough nice things about Joe Fletcher. But then, you know, you have guys who, you know, they want the full college experience, and if they can manage to balance that, more power to them. I was not, you know, I'm good at the internet. I'm not good with the friend thing. I had some friends. I'm not to say I was friendless, but I definitely was not tremendous socially. But it's definitely what you make of it. I ended up, you know, I was hurt a lot, and which meant I was writing a lot. And, that's where I spent a lot of my time, is watching the Sixers lose game after game after game.
The near the birth of the process. That'd be a perfect segue to writing because, I love your stuff on as Hoops Rambler. Anyone who follows you as well on Twitter, you have great tweets. So, like, where did you was it Loyola the first time you really started writing more on the internet, or did you start high school?
I had been writing like a really poorly named blog, National Blogskiball Association. That did not roll off the tongue for a period of time in high school. I thought that was quite clever at the time. But I moved on to Hoops Rambler while as a Twitter account, actually, I'm very active on Twitter. I've been using Twitter for like 9 years or something. So I was getting yelled at by my friends to shut up about basketball. So I started my own separate basketball Twitter account, is actually how Hoops Rambler started. And I would just tweet angrily about the Sixers into the void, which I still do. It's quite the tradition, though. But at one point, I was hurt a lot throughout college, so I spent a lot of time just off my feet, and that resulted in me watching a ton of Sixers basketball and a ton of NBA basketball because there's games on all the time, and I've never been the biggest hockey guy, and basketball had more accessibility to me, so I was watching a ton of Sixers basketball, and I would do little draft write-ups here or there. I already had a little bit of experience. I think one of my first things ever was like a year before Rudy Gobert got drafted. I was like, this guy could be a really good rim protector, but it was like, I can't even publish it. I can't gloat about it because it was so poorly written and like that I'm embarrassed. But like, I love my take, but like it's a tough thing. So I ended up starting Hoops Rambler up a little bit as like a blog spot and as a WordPress. And then at one point, I remember at the end of my senior year, I got a comment on it that said, anything that's done this well should not be done for free. And that kind of shook me a little bit because I was like, I've been doing all of this for free for like a year. What do you mean you would pay for this, you psychopath? Like, I won't pay for anything. So I was like, I at the time, I don't think I was paying for Netflix, and they make movies. So I guess what I did was, I registered the domain name. I got the, I had it hosted, and I threw a couple little ads up there. And, I started writing, and I started freelancing a little bit. I had people reaching out to me. I was cross-posting it onto sites like NBA Reddit and blasting it across Twitter a lot. And from there, I got some opportunities to either get sourced in places that would get me other looks or, have people reach out to me directly asking me to freelance for their sites. And it built a little bit of notoriety. I think I had 20,000 unique visitors in the first month of operation when it was up as a paid site. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. So, like, I want to go to the basketball first, but since we're just on the writing, what do you like more? What do you like the most about writing? Like just being able to get your thoughts out there, or just like dissecting an issue? Like, I really love your post about like LeBron coming here. What was it? Because we discussed the movie too. Because I wasn't a fan of the movie because it had what's his name, the guy who's the Hulk. With the Son of Sam movie, your whole blog post on LeBron was just fantastic. I forget the movie.
Oh, right. It was the Zodiac.
Zodiac. Yeah. And who's the guy?
That was like a man who killed people, right? That was not just a movie.
No, for sure. But I just
I just needed to clarify that like this is like people die.
But I was just like, when I watched the movie,
you're just sitting there like Jake Gyllenhaal, know.
And who's the Hulk? He's in that.
The little shrimpy guy.
He's kind
of. Was it the guy from? All right, I don't know. It was the guy from Fight Club, Edward Norton.
No, but it was close.
I'm thinking about the really bad Hulk from like 2003.
Exactly, you're right on the money. But he was a Hulk. But
I'm glad that we both went back to the bad Hulk, and we're nowhere near this like literally at the echelon of cinema right now is like the act like this Hulk, and I'm like no. I want the one from my prime in 2003.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that article. It was just great. I mean, it was obviously like a long read, but like you really get into it, and just like your voice is really enjoyable. So I just didn't know. Well,
I think that is kind of where what I like to do when I write is to get a chance to express my own voice and kind of break rules. And like, you know, even in creative writing classes that I took at Loyola, and there were rules, and I never feel that I don't speak with rules, but I know how to write as I speak. I mean, I don't care if I have to put 80 dots in front of a word. Like, that is what I'm doing right now. Like, I do things like that where if I want to make a one sentence paragraph, I'm just going to do it because that's what it sounds like when I'm saying it. So, I like the ability to express myself in a manner that is, I talk a lot, in case you haven't noticed. I talk a lot. I have a lot of thoughts, and I would love for people to be able to take the on their own time. It's really the crux of what I'm getting at. I never shut up, and I have a gajillion thoughts, and I don't want to be rude. I'm not going to force it on you.
Yeah.
You know, break it into pieces if I'm going to write a 10,000 word diatribe on Tim Duncan's greatness, but like, I'm going to write it exactly as I would say it. So
you're much too humble, obviously, but you're reminding me of that line from Workaholics where Adam goes like, I just talk sometimes, hear myself think. I don't think anyone's listening to me.
You know? That's exactly me. Yeah, I don't care. I'm saying stuff for me.
Exactly.
Are you thinking of Nick Nolte?
No, I didn't want to interrupt the train of thought, but
Nick Nolte,
Mark Ruffalo.
That's Mark Ruffalo. God, how can they have so many Hulks?
I bring back Eric Bana. That's the real Hulk. You know?
Okay, sorry.
This is great. This is the magic. You know, the dead air as I'm Googling Mark Ruffalo's name.
That's why people. So please tell me in really, really long words why you like anything.
But yeah, that's what I feel like. It's the authenticity. That's why people come back or you make a follow. You know what I mean? It's just like.
Right. No, I do feel that is why people like, they like what I do. I mean, I'm not putting on airs. I've done a great job not cursing on here, but I certainly don't on my side.
Fantastic. I really appreciate
it. Right?
Ryan does appreciate it as well because he would have to bleep it. And
I had a half hour podcast to do for a site I was working for over the summer. And they wrote explicitly in it, please try to limit the F-bombs. And I remember somewhere toward like, of course, like the 40 minute mark when it was a half hour podcast that they had ordered, me being like dropping a hard F-bomb and being like, that was like, what was that, 5? And like my co-host was like, yeah, that was about 5. And I was like, my bad.
Sorry about that, folks.
I'm doing a great job. I'm doing a great job right now. So.
This is like, yeah, I was just going to do another movie reference where in the town where Affleck's telling Renner I can't kill people, and Renner's like, hey man, you brought me. You know? So like, yeah, the listeners should just blame the host for bringing you on. You've been fantastic.
True.
But I think your your writing experience and your obviously lacrosse experience. What do you feel like some of the things about aspects of basketball that are so similar to lacrosse? Like, we had Ryan Boyle on last week, and he's a big
huge name producer. Drop.
that was in context. That was
huge
humbly, let's just put it out there.
Yeah, no, you did. That was real subtle.
It's just casual, you know.
I could hear the pride in your voice.
But just to repeat myself for listeners in here, we had Ryan Boyle, the Princeton guy, on here last week. But, he's a huge hoops fan, and, he was just talking about, the pick game and basketball. Lacrosse can learn a lot. Do you see, Gabe, little aspects of lacrosse that, like, could really be helped by, adopting some of the basketball principles or, even vice versa?
No, I do. I think there's a couple different reasons why I gravitate towards both basketball and lacrosse. With that pick game, especially to what Ryan Boyle was speaking to, I'm gonna take a page out of that. That wasn't even intentional. To my good friend Ryan Boyle, who I've never spoken to. So my freshman year, the year that we won the championship, Coach Dan Chamati, who's now the coach at Richmond, who his team had a little bit of struggles against an incredible Albany team this past weekend, but I got a chance to tune in and watch. and you still see some facets of offense that I remember. He's one of the best coaches that I've ever had in my entire life, and he created this slow break that Loyola does with, you know, our rope unit that's been incredible year after year, and the way that they interact with our attackmen. You start to see that happen in basketball now, especially with teams that really, really run the pace like the Golden State Warriors, where guys are flying off picks to corners to get shots that might seem off balance. But the point is that they're open. And if you're open, you can, and you have players with talent, you know, like a guy like Mike Sawyer, I can consider a guy like Steph Curry, where, you know, he's flying off his back foot from 11 yards. And you have full confidence that he's just going to stick a corner, and if you can get him open, you're just going to get him open. And you're really starting to see similarities with that as guys become incredible shot makers and guys who can change direction and get to the basket super quickly. Guys like James Harden. Where this pick game is becoming incredibly prevalent. I mean, the pick and roll has always been, you know, a big thing, but you can nerf it, to use a gaming term in basketball now. Just run it over and over if you can't stop.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of coaches in the NBA that will do that. They'll run something until you stop it. I've seen Ty Lue run the same Cavs set 4 times in a row. People don't give him credit because LeBron James is incredible, but Ty Lue, he can get his due when he doesn't. He just looks real dumb, which is hard. He's got resting stupid face. But it's very, very similar in lacrosse when it comes to high paced stuff, when it comes to those picking games and that pick and pop, especially, when you have guys diving to the rim in basketball, you're going to get fouled, whereas in lacrosse, you're going to get lit up. And even if you get a flag thrown, you're probably not going to do that again, which I think a lot of defensive coordinators, that's kind of the centerpiece of any slide, from that far side or out of the middle, is just make sure they don't do that again.
Now, before we leave basketball, we obviously got to talk a little Sixers. How do you feel about the season in general and the Celtics series?
Naturally, I feel that the season was an amazing success. This was far beyond anything that anybody had anticipated. So, I'm happy. I'm upset with Markelle Fultz. It's an upsetting situation.
How he's handled?
The issue is, yes, we were held in the dark, but I don't understand why he hasn't been more clear. I understand that he's 19, but it's not that hard to just say, "I'm still hurt, man. I'm still hurt." If he's gone crazy, then that's another thing. But I can kind of get mad at him for going crazy. I've had people get mad at me for going crazy. So I'm down.
I agree with you on the over. I mean, like, at the beginning of the season, what was the over under? 43, 44 for the.
I put it at 39.
And
that was my personal.
We exceeded
that. Was like my benchmark. That was my benchmark for success, and we hit 52. So like, I can't say anything.
So we exceeded that. If it was changed around and we were the 4th seed, I would have loved to play Toronto instead of the Celtics, just because. I don't know.
Toronto probably would have eviscerated us too.
Really?
I
felt like we were playing with house money when we played the Celtics, but I was like, each game.
Kyle Lowry in his whole career has dominated the Sixers. I don't know what it is. I know he's from Philadelphia, and I know he feels very comfortable here, but I have never, ever, ever watched a Raptors game where I haven't been like, oh, Kyle Lowry's going to score 39.
So. Do you think people are overreacting to Celtics' loss in Philly? My source is, I'm out of the city now. I've heard some insane things, and it was one of them we're going to get to about Ben Simmons. I've heard some people. I think it's like, if it could mean getting LeBron and Kawhi, they're willing to trade Ben Simmons if whatever. But I was like,
no, they're not going to trade Ben Simmons.
Thank God. All right, good. Because I think that would just be the worst.
No, I don't think. I mean, it's just financially, it's not the decision. Even you can throw logic out the window because money defies logic every single time, or money dictates logic, realistically.
Yeah.
A lot of people feel that it doesn't, but especially in something where there's a cap to literally there's a cap to how the way they're able to maneuver. It means that there it's like chess. There's a limited number of moves and there is a best move. And you know, obviously, can you convince Kawhi to, you know, that's really besides the point. The best situation for the Sixers to be in, especially with the new CBA, is to have someone who is very clearly an all NBA talent. There's really not any way around it, even if he doesn't learn how to shoot. And he's shown, other than his foot injury, which I personally feel and have heard others express as well, is, you know, an aberration. You lock that player up for as long as you humanly can. In the new CBA, it's pretty much built around never letting Kevin Durant happen again. That's the main plan. So if you have homegrown talent, they're going to let you offer $30, $40, $50 million more dollars than anyone else to keep that person. And as long as Josh Harris is, and he's joined, you know, luckily our ownership group is owned by a number of people, meaning if we go into the luxury tax, it will be paid by a number of people.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not going to be as financially damaging as a group that is owned by a singular person. You know, we'll be able to maintain top tier talent for the longest period possible, which is, you know, that's going to optimize your chance at winning a championship. So that being said, I'll trade Markelle Fultz and O1 and arguably Dario for Kawhi Leonard in a second.
I'd first try Fultz in a pick, and then they're going to say no. Dario in a pick.
Go I would do that. Fultz in a pick if he doesn't agree to resign. I will do Fultz a pick, Dario, and like some filler if he can, you know, he'll agree to resign, and then we'll just like we'll win in my mind.
All right. Before we leave basketball, is LeBron coming to Philly next summer?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes. I'll answer that now. I saw you writing it, and I'm going to guess.
Excellent.
No, I mean, you know me. I have a full article. Anybody who's listening, if they really want to, can check it out on hoopsrambler.com. But
I'm going to include it in the post. So don't worry.
It's like 600 reasons why he's coming. And some of them are like very tinfoil hat. But some of them make a ton of sense if you think about who LeBron James is. This is a man who's incredibly focused on narrative. He's incredibly focused on, and narrative is another reason why I like lacrosse and basketball in the same way. I think that teams have narratives, and they don't just subsist throughout one season. You know, there is a season narrative, and then there's a long-term narrative. Mm-hmm. And teams have those, and they have to defeat them, and they have to, you know, they have to live up to them. There are all of those things that create an immense number of storylines with a lot on the line in both sports. So I just had to put that out there. But for LeBron James' sake, you know, business sense, legacy sense, storyline sense, these are all things he cares about, and they're all available at both.
And one X factor, I think, and I'm whole with you, especially the business sense, you're just talking about money dictates logic. His relationship with Ben Simmons just kind of makes too much sense for him to come here. But I don't think LeBron would mind having like Philly and Philly diaspora behind him in these MJ versus LeBron arguments.
We're so mean. We're so mean. And I think having that meanness.
We could change the whole nature of the debate. You know, it would be like, well, maybe is Jordan better than LeBron? That's all we have to do. We just have to switch it.
Take a note of the timestamp because I'm going to curse for sure. Tell Michael Jordan to suck our like, that's something that we'll do. Like, we will do that. And I don't think, like, a ton of other fan bases are willing to just, like, kind of tell the GOAT to just, like, yeah, like, I'm not going to say it again, but refer back to my previous statement. We'll do that. Like, we don't even care. Like, whatever. Like, and I think that that's a huge thing. We're crazy people. He said Carson Wentz is his favorite player in the NFL right now. As a Cowboys fan, he said that.
Mm-hmm.
And he just watched us literally lose our minds.
Win
the Super Bowl. So I think, you know, okay, a guy ate horse poop in Cleveland. That was like the most fun thing they did when they won the championship.
Oh, that was our
thing. It actually happened. You can mute. Oh, no, we did that also.
Yeah.
But that was only part of what we did.
Exactly.
We did tons of other fun stuff, too.
Before we close out on lacrosse, we have to do a mention of the Super Bowl. Where were you watching the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl?
The NFC Championship game, I was watching at home. At the time, I had three roommates. We were all kind of just packed in, really just enjoying ourselves and having some adult beverages and just gratefully enjoying beating the living snot out of a team I was positive had the magic to go the distance. And for the Super Bowl, I had to make sure that I was close to Center City. I was at Drinkers in Center City.
Oh, of course.
Drinkers Pub, classic.
I like that place, actually. My boy and I.
Yeah, great bar. And
But this Drinkers is the Drinkers Bowl, in Old Drinkers, City.
Right? No, this was the Center City one because I wanted to be close. Drinkers Old City, I will also give a shout out to. I'm good friends. Follow them on Instagram. They're a great meme page. Good friends with the owners and all the bartenders there when I was living there. 50 Cent Wing Wednesdays. You'll never find a better Wing Wednesday. Drinkers Old City, Philadelphia.
And
there you go.
Would you write to Center City? I mean, I was pretty much the same area.
I immediately sprinted outside and was screaming and high-fiving random people and just like I wanted fireworks, but like I'm responsible and didn't have any fireworks.
perfect way to end it. So before we get to the really fun pop culture and rapid fire stuff, we obviously got to talk a little bit about the tournament. So just in general, how do you feel about the Hounds this year?
Oh, don't worry. I took notes today. I watched a bunch of games this weekend specifically for this. So my notes are Syracuse had a late surge emotionally. I just felt that was important to write. I felt emotionally they were close. They were close. And I was surprised that Cornell – although Cornell – I mean they beat a who did they beat that I felt was really, really good? They beat Yale at some point this season.
Oh, yes, they did. Yes.
And that really surprised me, especially – I think Yale – I'm terrified of Yale. If there's any team I would least like to play, I think for me this – in this Elite Eight, it would be Yale because they're just – their two losses are so weird. Their two regular season losses are so weird. It was a season opener in OT and then another OT loss to Bucknell. And I've lost an OT to Bucknell, and it doesn't feel good. and they smoked Albany coming down the stretch. They were on a crazy hot streak. And then they lost, a weird aberration game to Cornell, who, just kind of weirdly squeezed by, Syracuse, which I felt really emotionally was in it. So, that Cornell team's gritty, I guess, in my head. Mm. I love Ethan Walker on Denver. I think that kid is the man.
Ethan's awesome. Yeah, absolutely.
I love the way he shoots. I love the way he sets himself up in a half court offense. That kid is DeMar DeRozan.
He was no, go ahead.
And this face off duel with Denver and Albany is going to be a ton of fun. I'm really excited to watch the Wings. That Denver LSM, I'm not sure of his name, but he's so much fun to watch. And that kid, he reminds me a lot of Scott Radliff, who I've mentioned now a stupid amount of times on this podcast. But hey, Scott.
Shout out, Scott.
Yeah, he's the man. I'm excited to watch that duel with the X in that Denver series. I did feel against Virginia, the Hounds were – it felt like – we were in control. 14-12 doesn't feel representative of that game. Do you agree?
Absolutely not. Jake and I were talking about it on the book. Because there's, kind of a knee-jerk Virginia's back kind of thing now that they made the tournament and won a ACC game. But, if you watch that game, maybe the time delay affected UVA more. But, I mean, you guys just came out.
Well, no, that doesn't mean anything. Nobody,
I don't think it's
from an energy standpoint or whatever, but there's that honestly, because I've been through delays, I've been through weird situations like that, and at the end of the day, I guess it does come out to who got up more for the game, but it's such a roll of the damn dice if you get put off for an hour and a half, I would say, yeah, those things that I was speaking to earlier, where what's your chemistry like? How are, do you have multiple ways to get motivated? Things like that are important, but it just, it's one of those things that you, it's a scary feeling because you don't know at all whether you're about to come out fired up or flat. And there's really no way around it.
I wholeheartedly agree. And I said both teams like were affected by it. So I don't think many people are making that excuse. I'm just saying if it's even out there, I don't give it much credence. But my main point is just like the first half, you guys smoked them. I mean, like you guys went into halftime 10-5. I just felt like the energy on your team, just UVA couldn't match it. And, you know, they were came back, but, you know, 6 goals in the fourth, I think you guys were kind of just like trying to hope that the clock just continues to run and just like, you know, maybe a little bit of the intensity dropped off. But, you know, it was a convincing win. And the 14-12 score report is no way indicative of like what went on.
Yeah, the score did not represent. My other few thoughts, Yale beating UMass, 15-3. I didn't get a chance to watch that game, so I don't know if it's the same situation as our 14-12 win. But I got a chance to look at UMass's schedule, and like they were not tested. Like they got hot, but like I did not see very many super quality wins for them. And that made me think, you know, I mean, I can't tell if UMass just made a late run or not, but like I'm very worried about Yale. I believe in my team. I don't know. I want them to win, but I hope that they really gear up for this one. And my other thought is I did get a chance to watch the Duke team, and why are they the same team every year? They never look any different, and it kills me. We played Duke every single year that I was there, and I watched Duke because I'm watching Final Four weekend, and I, you know, they're always on TV because they're Duke. Why did the God, they're so well coached. It's insane.
Yeah, they're, you know,
they play the same lacrosse no matter who they put on the field. They've got like three pretty athletic attackmen. One of them's a little bit more athletic than the other one. They've got a midfield that can shoot. They've got a defense that's gonna get physical, and like an LSM that's gonna hound you. And like they just have skilled midfielders, skilled attackmen. No, they're never gonna like over athlete you like Maryland does, but they're just. Man, that's the sets they run are all the same, and they're good.
I am definitely concerned about this game too, because I think two.
Oh, I think that you guys lose to Duke.
Oh well,
I've watched. This is where you guys are also on TV all the damn time.
This is where I bring out the tough questions. Now that is all.
Oh wait, no wait. I also have my Hopkins note. I have a Hopkins note.
I hope so.
My Hopkins note. Is that Johns Hopkins has narrative on their side.
Oh, yes.
Because 100% you could meet with Albany in the championship and coach son, or son versus coach, that's narrative.
Oh, my God. That's what
so, the like, people – you guys have that on your side, and that's like a driving force of sports gods.
And, you know, all the forces of good and pure things are behind Hopkins, so hopefully
that's
it wins out this year.
Not true.
So I got to ask you about our boy, Pat Spencer. Well, what's it like seeing him just develop these 3 years? Like I see now the free.
He's been so good. Like, I mean, watching him develop, obviously the kid is just such a generational passer is the thing. Like, I mean, of course he can score on you, but like, there are a ton of really, really good defensemen in college across. Like, the number one defenseman on a lot of top-tier teams are going to hurt you, and it sucks.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Playing attack sucks. I hate playing offense because it hurts. And this kid can just dice you up. I mean, he literally – it's so rare that – I mean, he's an opportunistic scorer, but he's so damn good that he can score on his own. Like, let's not downplay his ability at all.
Oh,
he can create his own shot a ton, and he will. And when I say opportunistic, I mean like any great scorer, they see their moments, they take them, and he completes on that. But his ability to pass through non-opportune moments, that I feel is really, like, that to me is his strength. Like, it's crazy to watch him create moments for others.
I mean, I just love Pat. I think, obviously, we're big fans of Jeff Teat and the Free Jeff Teat movement, but the original Free Jeff Teat was free Pat Spencer when he got snubbed out of Schwartz in his freshman year. He kind of reminds me a lot of Ben Reeves, just like size-wise, their ability to beat you on their own, you know, calling their own number, but this exquisite ability to, you know, find the open man at the right time. You know, I think is what separates those two from, like, the pack. So they're really excited about this game. You know, I've been kind of lightly trolling Yale. Like, you know, I like them, but just for the fans, I played the heel. But, yeah, I think this is going to be one of the better games, I think, besides the Hopkins-Duke game. I was, you know, Yale-Loyola was the one I was most excited to watch.
Yeah, I think that those two are definitely man, there's a lot of games. I'm not really going to watch this Maryland-Cornell game. I don't care about it at all.
I feel bad for Chris, obviously, most importantly, but I really did want to just see just a Maryland Syracuse quarterfinal games, because their fans are just like,
true, that is like, that's a great fan game, but like both of those teams, like, I don't know, like I watched Maryland play against Albany, like this was early in the season, and they're still obviously so athletic and so talented, because they always are, but like Maryland, in all of the times that I've, and again, this is mostly me watching. So when I say playing, when I played Maryland, this is take that very lightly. They are very, I wouldn't say easily, because no top tier team is easily done, but they are taken out of their groove and they are thrown off their rhythm by good coaching and by awkward, staggered offense. And I feel that they often feel that they need to match the tempo of who they're playing. And, you know, they've got very excitable players who are all so talented that they see an opportunity and they jump on it. But they don't always necessarily – it's not impossible to pull them out of cohesion. So I think Maryland occasionally can lay an egg because of that weird syncopation that you can kind of throw into the mix.
I'm starting to feel a little bit with Maryland. Like, I joked around on our pod last night. Like, I think like literally 70% of my ballots have Maryland at number one. Like, you know, it's just been so consistently good, but it kind of starts to, like, it feels like a little bit like a prize fighter. Like, they're a little wobbly, like the loss to Ohio State. Is a little bit surprising just because Ohio State was like at that point not you know, top 10, top 15 teams, but like,
I'm not surprised by that. Ohio State can get you, man. Those kids, like, they're a team that doesn't get rattled by anything. No. And like, they're either playing well or they're playing way better than you've ever seen them play, and it is terrifying.
No, and they can just choke you out, and but like the margin of victory was like
they are tough.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, you know, the margin of victory, like, that game and the margin of defeat, I guess, for Maryland. And that game and the Hopkins game were, like, you know, the most Maryland's lost by in, like, 2.5 years. And then, like,
I mean, the most I ever lost to in any college lacrosse game was to that was to Ohio State in I guess it was our first – was it maybe ECAC still? Yeah, it was our second – my sophomore year, our ECAC tournament got annihilated by Ohio State out of nowhere in Hobart.
Oh, yeah. And so, like, yeah, that was, yeah, they were really good that year. That was 2013. I
think they were very good.
I think that was a 3 seed, right? But they got knocked down the second round. But, yeah, so I just feel like it's going to, you know, it's going to be interesting this weekend. But I got another question for you before we get off lacrosse. Nas, great article by Chris Rosey for Inside Lacrosse, comparing lacrosse teams to rappers. And I was livid.
Oh, you're going to get into this.
I was livid at Nas for Hopkins. I think it's an outrage. Changed my mind.
This was months ago. You can't ask me, because I'm just going to hate on it.
All right. Well, we'll move on.
I said that you guys were a little boozy.
Yeah, well, this is where the pod is really good.
You guys could be Little Kim.
I think we're obviously Biggie or 50, so we're just going to move on to the pop culture section, which is what we really wanted to talk about here.
This is pretty much.
I think this is where
also right now the NBA draft lottery is going on, and I just wanted to let you know if I yell, that's why.
That's what we want, is that live authenticity.
Oh yeah, this is real authentic.
So why do you not like Paris and Nikki?
That was just like, that was such an awful time to be a human being, which is so funny because it's such an awful time to be a human being right now too. It was just Barack's years. Barack did it for us, man. He was really like, good stuff, man. You got rid of the simple life. Like, we had George Bush getting pelted by shoes, and our best celebrity was just like, she was just some lady. And then the second best celebrity was like some other lady. So yeah, that's why. Like, I don't, none of them did anything. Like, the best thing that they did was like be the daughter of a hotel owner with like not very nice hotels.
All right, that's hot.
Like, you're fine.
That was good. We're going to keep it apolitical. Moving on. Favorite reality TV show from the aughts?
Favorite reality TV show from the aughts was Next.
Next was good.
Next was great. Next was so unbelievably rude. Like, they would I had like 9 of these.
No.
Next was awful. Pit My Ride was tremendous. Like, Pimp My Ride was so thoughtless. Like, of a show that's literally based on doing something thoughtful for someone, they did no research at all.
It's just like,
Before Facebook? So it was literally just like, yo, we saw his backpack on the way out and it had a dog on it. Fill his car with live dogs. And that was like, that was it. That was all you had.
You were thinking like, all right, I'm going to get some nice rims. And then they come out, dude, we put an air conditioner in the back and a fish tank in the passenger
seat. Oh, my God. They would never put an air conditioner in there. They didn't think that far ahead. They were just like, popcorn machine and a fish tank. And then, like, a gigantic subwoofer under the fish tank they wouldn't mention that, like, cost, like, $4,300.
That was that. Yeah, I got all the young kids are looking up Pimp My Ride videos on YouTube. So, did you watch The Hills? And if not,
no,
did you watch The Good Omens?
No,
not
no.
Too materialistic, but
man, I lived in Philadelphia. What did you want me to do? Like, I don't go to the beach. Like, I hate water. We know this. Cold, wet, tired, and alone. I'm scarred.
All right. So I was just gonna move on from Team Kristen or Team Laura. Last movie you saw in the theater?
Oh, man.
And if you want to give your theater take, I would love that. That would absolutely be fantastic.
I hate theaters.
Yes, thank you.
I feel that they are disgusting. I will not confirm or deny that I do this, but I do feel that if someone were to be within their rights to learn how to illegally download every movie and do that, they should, because theaters are disgusting.
So you have no time for the communal aspect of watching like a horror movie.
Why would I want to watch a movie, which is a completely solitary experience, with anyone?
Because is that this was, I'm just now being a tough questioner here. Just like, you know, again, the communal aspect, like everybody laughing together, like a really good, like some movies.
When I already told you, I don't do people. I do alone. I hate people.
I just had to press the guests. I couldn't just
make of all the people that press me as much as you want, I will bite back vigorously. But I'll never get offended.
Excellent. All right, so we're going to – you've been much too gracious with your time, but we got some fun rapid-fire questions for you. So obviously, feel free to go in-depth as long as you want. But this is got – all right, so best Philly
– way to qualify that with how ridiculously verbose I am.
No, I just didn't want you to think like I wanted this, and I just wanted you to know, you know.
I wanted to go on forever.
we have no shot clock on this network, so
love to hear that. That's why it's untitled.
Best Philly area high school lacrosse player while you were in high school. You could do when you were freshman, they were senior.
Never doubt it. It's Jordan Wolf.
Jordan Wolf, easily.
Jordan Wolf was a year above me at Laura Marion. I played with him for 3 years. I played with him in practice every day, and there is no doubt in my mind that he's the reason that I played Division I lacrosse at all.
He
was hands down. I mean, he could have played any sport in the world. End of story. He was so quick. I have never seen one person get from point A to point B within a 15-yard radius, period.
Wow. Ever. I mean, he was a monster at Duke, so couldn't go wrong with picking Jordan. All right, so best place to eat in Baltimore when you were there, and we can even make it to your favorite. You know, maybe not necessarily the best, but like you can go for both answers.
You know, I wasn't the biggest fan of Baltimore as a city. You know, having grown up in a big city, and this was kind of the second city I'd ever lived in, it was a little bit of a letdown from a culture food standpoint, especially someone who loves food as much as I do. My favorite place to eat would probably have to be Pepe's. It was on. It was somewhere a little bit off Cold Spring, but I could not tell you really any of it. I just know that the reason I liked it is they called it a slice of pizza, but it was two slices of pizza. We can call it Stoko's as well. I'll shout out Stoko's. They stir stuffed shells with chicken parm up top.
Oh.
And that's a huge win for me.
That's big, yeah.
And they deliver till like 3:30 o'clock in the morning.
All right, I know your opinion on water, but I got to ask this. Favorite shore spot?
Well, that's very different. I mean, like the shore, we're both Margate-ish fellows.
Oh, right on. Indeed.
Two of my best friends, there's a house in at the end of Long Port, which is kind of, living in the lap of luxury. Or I will shout out the Sussman residents, my buddy Mitchell Sussman of Sussman Honda. Shout out to all of the Sussman brand. But, the Sussman residence is always a great time, right on the beach block down by Sumner, I think. I'm not going to say exactly where because I'm not going to let people break into your home, Mitch. But, so right around Sumner Street, it gets to be a good set. So if you're looking for me on the beach, look around Sumner.
Yeah. Or maybe you have to, yeah.
Oh, or Maynard's. I mean, you'll find me at Maynard's regardless.
Oh, yeah. No, this is best answer possible when you just said Margate at Longport for your first two. So.
You're aware. And it's, yeah. I'm not saying Lucy because that elephant is creepy.
Come on. That's a cultural icon.
People slept in that.
That was a hotel. Yes, it was great. Lucy is.
That is weird.
Did you know there were three Lucys and two of them were. I think one was in Manhattan and
there's
one other.
There are way too many Lucys now and there's one.
It's the last one standing because of. It's one amazing thing. Like, I don't know how it survived Sandy. I really don't. Like,
because God wanted it to.
It's always standing. I was going to say favorite movie, but it was a little difficult for people. So if you can give three if you want, or if you're forthright in your response.
I would say my favorite movie has to be Forrest Gump.
Really?
Yeah, I could watch that movie any time that it's on. Shout out Tom, man. I don't know. I mean, like, I hate Jenny so much. She's just the worst.
She was horrible. She treated him so badly.
And she gave him AIDS. All right. No, are we ignoring the Jenny Gump gave her husband? Or like, no, not even her husband. The man that she just like kind of played with a little bit and then left to do whatever she wanted. Came back to when suddenly she had to saddle him with responsibility of a child with AIDS also.
Okay, I mean, I thought she was, she just treated him horribly. Like, stole his shine when he was at the Lincoln Memorial during his speech.
Jen Yup is, like, genuinely, like, arguably my least favorite person in the history of
stuff. Jen is like, oh, this dork. And then she sees him on the stage and she's like, oh, Forrest, how you doing?
Oh,
this?
I love you. Oh, are you sure? Because you had a boyfriend who was literally, like, the worst a second ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Forrest Gump. Other than that, I'm going to throw Anchorman and Superbad.
Superbad, when that came out, that was just...
Superbad is like my... It's like my generation's Animal House. It's like... It's everything. Oh, and it's... Anchorman is just... you know, I think that now it's finally starting to get underrated because people forget... because of how often it's quoted that it's amazing, but you could watch it 1,000 times. And I'm sure there's like 80 other movies that I'm like forgetting and be mad about, but those are the first three off the top of my head, and I'll stick with them.
Those are three good ones. It was Emma Stone's last good role in the Superbad. So,
wow, hot take.
That's it. We're going to get into actresses and stuff. So yeah, well, since we're all movies, do you have a favorite actor or movie that you'll see definitely, or actress?
You know, I don't really care too much for that. Charlie Day, if he's doing something, the odds are that I'll probably get involved. Mm-hmm. But overall, no. I mostly don't tend to – I like directors more than I like actors.
Well, we'll switch.
Like, I'll see, any Quentin Tarantino movie, like any single –
Nolan, Fincher? Would you put those?
Yeah, I'll see either of the Nolan, either of the Nolan books. You know that I'm the biggest Westworld fan ever.
Yeah, that's
Westworld is a gift.
Adam as well. He's like kind of, it's kind of not getting the due that it's, you know, I guess because
it will. Wes Anderson, I've seen every single Wes Anderson film 1,000 times. Like. I gave my computer a virus my friend gave his computer an illegal virus trying to download Isle of Dogs recently.
And
so, you know, those are my three, directors, I guess. Probably like, we'll punch the Nolans into one. And then we'll go ahead and say Tarantino and Wes Anderson.
That's a good trifecta there. Well, I guess since you don't have a favorite actor, I thought this would be a fun most off-brand.
My off-brand? Oh, I know that. That's Steve Zahn. Throw it down.
Steve Kahn?
Steve Zahn, from Sahara.
Yeah, no, of course.
He was great in Sahara. He was amazing in Strange Wilderness. Like, Steve Zahn, if I need a weird actor, that's my go-to.
Yeah, that's actually a really good answer.
Yeah, I felt like that. Well, I felt like that was a good answer. I feel like I nailed that.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely crushed that one. Zahn is he's great.
He's quite niche.
moving on. Favorite TV show right now?
That's Westworld 1,000%. I mean, like, I sit down on a Sunday night. I've got a TV, but I have a projector, and I break up the projector screen every single Sunday night, and I hook up the soundbar. And I sit by myself and I watch Westworld on a 200-inch screen on my wall. And I scream at the television. Breaking Bad was my previous best show. But right now, which is part of the question, yeah, it's Westworld without a doubt.
Yo, I just can't leave this Zane comment without
Is that how you say it, Zane? I don't even know. I've never heard it said.
Zane, what is our boy Steve? Let's just call Steve. Saving Silverman. That was like that was my jam.
He was a great in Saving Silverman.
Saving Silverman was a fantastic movie.
I'll see you later, Judith.
okay, that's good. So do you have let's go to Netflix?
Netflix? I mean, it shits around, but currently Arrested Development is my number one. I know that they have season 5 coming out pretty soon. They just remixed season 4. So Arrested Development, without a doubt, takes the number one on my Netflix. From there, I've been kind of doing, because they took It's Always Sunny off, so I booked it over to Hulu, and I watch It's Always Sunny on Hulu.
Hulu's great because they have the thick of it and the movies, the Christmas specials right. on Hulu. So,
But also my one issue with Hulu is, okay, so I pay for your service. Why am I seeing ads?
Pretty much. Good question.
I mean, cable can do it because cable just has me in a vice grip. But like, you guys are Hulu. Shut up. What are you doing, Shonet?
That's true.
And then my final, it's got to be Planet Earth 2.
Have you seen? I just killed Peaky Blinders.
I can't understand it, man. And I can't do subtitles because I just read them the whole time.
Okay.
Like, I don't. I like paying attention to move to like details of shows. Good like point. I like looking at background and foreground and looking at cinematography because like that's just stuff that I enjoy. Mm. And I legitimately am staring at the subtitles the entire time and cannot watch shows.
I don't know. Maybe that's an indictment on me, but I do love subtitles. But especially any British show. Like people make fun of Tom Hardy when he was, in the
They're making fun of him. He's British with a super thick accent.
The Nolan movie that just came out this summer, the war movie.
Dunkirk, right?
Yeah. So, but they were joking around like, oh, Hardy's got a mask in front of his face. We can't understand him. And I'm always
so the mask in front of his face for every single role of his career.
Exactly. But I'm like, listen. He could have a mask or not a mask. He's British. I can't understand anything that they're saying. Like, they really should have, like, these Flavor Flav clocks with, like, closed captioning when they talk. So
I'm a reader, so I'm literally – I'm reading it every time.
No, I feel you. I get stuck into that. I think that's probably why I watch things, like, two or three times, just to catch the things I was missing while I was reading from the dialogue. But I think at times – you do get like stuff that you don't hear that well, and then they'll like, say or like, little clues or not clues, but you know, things that are going on in the show. But
I'm just gonna quickly jump in here and say that the Pistons sent Luke Kennard as their representative to the lottery, so that's how little they care.
Well, he's Van Gundy looks really bad.
Imagine. Well, Van Gundy's gone. I guess they didn't even hire anyone to make any decisions, and Luke Kennard must have been around the block, and they just were like, "Yo, pick up our lottery ticket for it."
Just send Joe. He's still a friend of the program, right? Or Dumars.
Who knows? I love Dumars.
Oh, Dumars is a great player, and I enjoyed those Pistons teams that he. They only got there the one time, but they're always like a. Unique team, so it always made them different. All right, we'll close out with the three questions. Favorite place to eat in Philly? You can put three if it's too hard.
All right, we can put three. I'm going to Drinker's Old City for their Cajun wings. Mm. I am going to Steve's Prince of Steaks up north, the furthest north one. Not in Langhorne, but North Philly.
At a principle, or is it better?
It's better.
Really?
Okay. The Center City one, they don't give enough meat. They'll give you more meat at the further north one, and that's the best steak in the city, in my opinion. Mm. And then. I am going to Nine Ting Korean Barbecue in Center City.
Oh, yeah.
It is $27 for unlimited Korean barbecue for like 2.5 hours. So, and they have a sauce bar. And, everyone knows that a good sauce is going to help you out.
Do they have a shot clock but not a food clock?
They don't necessarily have a shot clock, but, like, I feel like they start getting rude to you after, like, $1.30.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, you're just pushing it. After an hour, you're pushing it.
Oh, and they do free seafood scallion pancakes. They're delicious.
That sounds great. I got a couple sandwich places.
And if it's your birthday, they give you free food on your birthday. Fun fact.
Oh, right on. Have you had Eritrean or Ethiopian food, and how was it?
I have had Ethiopian food. I have not had Eritrean food. I absolutely despise Ethiopian food, so I'm picking Eritrean food every time.
Oh, is that for me?
In D.C. too. I was in D.C., which is a hub of Ethiopian food.
Yeah.
I went there, and I was psyched, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to get good Ethiopian food, and it was horrible, and I'll never eat it again.
Oh, God. We are similar. We both use the injera, but...
Do you use the pancakes?
Yeah, what we have, like, yeah. We have, like, more veggie and seafood just because we're on the coast.
More veggies?
Yeah, it's just like...
You're not telling me. Although you have sold me on the seafood. But, like, dude, the pancakes, like, have you ever heard of the thing tripoptophobia? Those little fear of, like, little bubbles?
I've heard of it, yeah. I've never thought I would talk about it. But yeah.
I had that looking at the little pancake.
And Jared? No, you got it. Well, I mean, we got a whole... rainbow of choices, Alexi. So maybe next time in Philly, I'll give you something that's not in Jared.
Does Philly have good Ethiopian or Eritrean?
Yeah, definitely. It's West Philly. There's definitely a good community of Ethiopians, and there's like four or five in West Philly area. There's one that I used to go to a couple times right in Center City, Almaz is called. But
I mean, like, I'm a huge fan of like any non-American food. Like I'll get, I'm not down. Like me and the Ethiopian, we got serious beef. I would need to be very convinced.
All right. Well, like I said, there's definitely a lot of other stuff besides injera, but if you like Italian, at least the traditional Eritrean places in Eritrea.
Weird shout out to another Philly food place, by the way. I had some of the best Italian I'd ever had in my entire life at a place called Murph's Bar in Fishtown. The chef is directly out of Italy. I was blown away. I walked in and met the most Philadelphia man I had ever met in my entire life. His name was Kevin Murphy. And he everything was plural. It was use guys needs it. And he legitimately was like, our chefs, and I thought there'd be multiple chefs. I met the chef. There's one chef. Our chef is from Italy. Guy was straight off the boat from Italy and made the best lobster manicotti I'd ever had in my entire life. It changed my world. And it was $16 because it was in a weird Irish bar in Fishtown.
Right on.
Hey. Shout out, Murphs.
That is a great area, Fishtown. Really good food. I went to there with Antonio, my friend Danielle. She does the food blogs, and she always hits up a lot of great places there.
Next time you're eating in Fishtown, let me know. I'm right here.
Absolutely. Can't leave this pod without asking you the toughest question I could. Best Philadelphia basketball player. Best basketball player to come out of Philadelphia. You can even do a little bit of the suburbs if you want.
Did you just do that to include Kobe Bryant and Chauncey Billups and arguably Rasheed Wallace? Well, my answer is it's easily Will Chamberlain.
Okay.
My favorite basketball player to come out of Philadelphia is Earl the Pearl Monroe.
Those are two just legends. Like, I don't think many people, just because he's so synonymous with Syracuse, realize he came out of Philly.
Absolutely. If you haven't looked up Earl Monroe's highlights, there is one video of him in an NBA championship game, breaking a dude's ankles, dancing on him, and just throwing the ball into the middle of him. It's the craziest thing ever. It was like the 60s or 50s where you cannot do that. And he just did it anyway. He invented swagger. End of story.
Pretty much built Syracuse.
Sorry about that, Miles Davis and Charlie Parker. No, that it was Earl Monroe invented swagger.
Pretty much. Amen. But, Alexi, this was amazing. I hope you enjoyed it as well. We I thought it was going to be really fun. It was much more fun than I thought it could be.
Yeah, man. We did the damn thing. I'm glad we did. Anytime you're back, feel free to let me know. I've got a very weird schedule, I tend to be around if I'm not doing weird basketball things or other random assorted strange things that I do.
No. I think we might have to run it back, as the kids say in the playground.
Run it back. I'm always down to be on anything. If you need me to take a little bit more lacrosse notes, I'll be happy to do that. I know that this is, that's what the people want. And as Jalen Rose says, you got to give the people what they want.
That's the only thing. That's your only responsibility as a contributor on a platform. Is give the people what they want.
That's true. I agree.
But
and I didn't curse. Well, I cursed once, but I gave fair warning. I'm so proud of myself.
I think, it was fine. I was really, impressed. You did that. I knew you were going to be a great guest, which wasn't that word anyway. But Hope you all enjoyed listening to us talk 85-ish minutes, but we got a couple more of these coming up. But Alexi, man, this was great. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you, Safe. This is awesome.
Good stuff.
All right, appreciate it, man.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah. All right.